It's not just NFL stadiums. It's actually all sports stadiums and venues like NBA and hockey arenas and MLB ballparks. So MLB, to a lesser extent, they're usually able to sell cheaper concessions because of mainly tradition. But the reason that you pay $12 or so for a Bud Light, say, in really most stadium sports venues across the country, is because so many different people and factions are getting a piece of that revenue from that beer. So you have the vendor in the stadium, you have the people that work that vending cart, you have the stadium staff, you have the stadium owners, you have the Anheuser-Busch who sells Bud Light, you have the players who are getting a chunk of the revenue, you have the TV the TV sponsors and the TV stations who are getting a chunk. You have the league who's getting a chunk. You have so many people who are collectively selling you that Bud Light that in order for everyone to get enough money to make it worthwhile, that beer has to be $12. Maybe it doesn't have to be $12, but also that's the price point at which it was concluded that that would make people the most money. And so even if it doesn't have to be $12, it might have to be $9. That's why your beer is so expensive.
So the reason we kind of started talking about this in the first place is kind of because we were talking about club culture, and Daniel was bringing up, and I'll let him go and discuss it further in a second, but Daniel was saying that over in Leeds, he supports Leeds United, and they will cost, what was it, £39 per ticket? So he said that's about $55, you said, but they will only charge you £6 per beer. So cheaper beer, more expensive tickets. And so Adam was kind of, you know, just to bring you guys up to speed, giving us that kind of, that this is why beer is more expensive in the MLS or American stadiums. But we did want to talk about club culture. So Daniel, I'm going to let you kind of say what you wanted about club culture and we'll go from there. Sound good?
All right. Sounds like a plan. Well, I don't know. Coronavirus has brought out a lot of different things about, you know, really humanity and society in general. I feel as if the good and the bad have both come out. I mean, I'll give you a good example that we're all familiar with. We look at some of the people we know over Twitter. Charlotte comes straight to mind. She's a nurse, works for NHS over in the UK. Probably going through all kinds of, you know, worries and stress every day about contracting this illness and working with very little resources. And yet she goes out there, puts herself out, helping others. You know, my wife is a nurse. She's putting herself at risk every time she goes to work right now because they don't have the resources. Same with Jeremy Walker, another of our Twitter friends. And, you know, these guys go out and do their best. And then you go to the flip side of the culture, and I read about how some of these sports teams and bigger businesses are handling this minor recession now. Well, it's going to be a major recession that we're approaching, and furloughing workers, firing, you know, vast amounts of people. And then to cap it off, you have the Minnesota owner who was goading the people he fired with sarcastic emails about applying for jobs at Pepsi. And I think, you know, just generally sort of pissing off his entire workforce.
Was it really sarcastic? I didn't actually read the email.
It was sarcastic in the sense, like, it showed very little empathy, you know? Like, it has the token paid for PR writing that you would expect in an email to an employee that you're letting them go. But I don't know, it's just like, the guy's worth $1.6 billion. It's like, how can you, you know, why do you pull the plug so soon? Why do you let everybody suffer so soon, you know?
That guy's literally one of the richest owners in MLS. Like, you wouldn't think of it, Minnesota United, but dude's worth one.
I mean, who is the owner?
Dr. something. I'm going to get his name right now. But, you know, you're worth that much money, and, you know, it's crazy. He's probably lost more money than those people will earn most of their lifetime, you know? So then I look at that, and then you look over to clubs over in Europe and the things that they're doing. I mean, you've got the top four teams, four of the top teams in Bundesliga have gone ahead and, you know, chipped in £20 million towards coronavirus assistance. My club, Leeds United, they got the entire staff. Marcelo Bielsa, he's taken a £46,000 a week wage deferral, along with all of his players, who are going to be capped at no more than £6,000 a week, so that the 271 employees, part-time and full-time at the club, can be paid until the season restarts. Now, this comes back to club culture, and it's like, you see this kindness and this goodwill in other countries or in other places. We come back to MLS, and my question to you guys is Orlando City going to do enough for the workers that it has here and the fan base after the games restart? And is MLS or American sports in general doing enough? Now I want to hear what you guys got to say about it.
So if I can go first, sure. The first thing I looked for when I read Letao's message today, did you guys read that today?
Yes, I read it.
I actually have not. I read it first thing I met myself on social media.
Right. I've been slowing down on social media as well. The first thing I looked for was, are we paying our employees? And we're not.
No.
And I didn't necessarily like take offense to that, or obviously I didn't take offense to it. But what I mean is, like, I wasn't up in arms about it because we haven't heard what's going on as of yet. But I was still looking for it, and I was kind of disappointed not to see any mention towards it. And that doesn't give me a good sign for what's to come when it comes to our employees. If I can just say a story real quick, I work at a Panera Bread in Tampa as a college student right now. My mom asked me to come home. She did not want me working. She did not want me out in the public. So she asked me to come home. I got a message from my manager that said, basically, you can either work at least one shift per week or one shift per 2 weeks and you will stay on our payroll, or you will get fired, or you have to file for unemployment and, you know, collect benefits and go through that whole process, and then they will rehire me after this is all over. I wasn't in Tampa anyway. I drove back to Melbourne earlier. Once I drove back to Tampa or to Melbourne on Sunday. I filed for unemployment last night. So I am technically unemployed. Panera technically fired me. They will rehire me after this whole mess is done. But as of right now, I do not have a job. And I have to, you know, look for a job via unemployment, reemployment benefits. But nobody's hiring right now. I'm afraid that the employees at Orlando City aren't going to be given that leeway, and around MLS aren't going to be, especially in Minnesota, aren't going to be given that leeway. They're going to lose their job, and then the clubs aren't going to have as much money when everything comes back. Excuse me, because this is, you know, going to hurt the market everywhere and in all financial aspects, and then they're not going to get their jobs back. That's what I'm afraid of for them.
And it's something interesting, like, Gavin, me and you both are going into, like, this field. We're going to be looking for jobs in the club whenever we graduate. So it's something that we're going to, you know, have invested sort of attention to, because, you know, if this is, like, a place where we want to work, like, and we know that they don't take care of their employees, like, why is this a field that we should be going into? And, like, I don't mean that to come off like selfishly. I'm just saying, like, that can have like a greater effect too. Like, companies, like, and, you know, organizations, whatever you want to call it, like, whatever message they're sending right now is also a message to just like future potential employees and like people who are going to want to work here. And like, nobody really is going to want to work for a place that, you know, doesn't necessarily care about them. And, like, is, no, it, yeah. is it going to help them whatsoever? So, like, this is like a time to send messages to, like, you know, younger people as well who might one day try to work for your kind of corporation, club, whatever.
What's stopping you and me from hopping on a plane to London and working at one of the clubs in the championship or the, you know, obviously it would be a stretch for us to get into the Premier League straight off the bat. Mm. But what's stopping us from going to work for a championship club straight out of college?
Like, you know, if we choose to, it's like, you know, Daniel, he's talking to us about like Leeds United, like the people who, you know, they have every right really not to care about like, you know, people who are just kind of like middle class workers. But, you know, Bielsa's taking pay cuts and teams all throughout, you know, European football right now are just doing what they can to help their communities and make sure everyone is taken care of. And like, you know, Orlando City, I know that they're paying their concession workers, which is, you know, any sort of effort in this time is commendable. But if you don't, you know, care at all about all of your employees, like what that doesn't really entice anyone into working for you in the future. And like, that just drives more people who could help the club in a positive manner. It just drives them away.
Yeah. I mean, it'll have a knock on effect. I mean, potentially, you know, cause goodwill means everything, especially in a one club city. You know, Orlando is a one club city. It's very unique in that sense. You know, because it's the majority of soccer fans are going to support Orlando City. That's a given. That's like a head start. Going back into the example with Leeds, Leeds are already on course to lose several million a month until this season kicks back on. We all know if they don't get the promotion to the Premier League, you know, if the season is voided, they're looking at losing £100 million. So this pay cut, pay deferral that's been taken, there's no guarantee those people will get that money if the club hits financial trouble. And yet, in goodwill, it's been done to protect, you know, 273 employees. I met a guy when I was there who did the stadium tour, who set me up with the face-to-face access I got with the coach and with a few of the players. He's been there 60 years, you know, and those people took care of that man. His name is Styx, fantastic guy. 60 years he's been there, and they took care of him. They've put their hand in their pocket, so to speak, and made sure that he still has a job at the end of all this. And for that, you know, the club has my utmost love and respect. And, you know, with Orlando City, I mean, they are taking the funds from my account and many other fans for our season tickets still. I'm just trusting the club to try and do their best. I don't think there's a solution that fits everyone, but, you know, they need to hopefully have the goodwill to help some of the employees.
They're still taking money?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wrote a piece, not on my blog, actually, on MLS Now Podcast's website. I wrote a piece about why I personally think MLS might not return this season at all. Okay? You know, it's debatable. We don't know when this is going to end. I don't know when this is going to end. Nobody does. I mean, the CDC can put their charts out, but in all honesty, it depends on who does what, who goes out, who spreads the virus, when, where, how. But there is a very real possibility this lasts for a lot longer than a lot of people think. What happens if they cancel the season? Are we going to refund our supporters? We have to, right?
Yeah, of course you do.
I'm sure there's something fine about that. It is a contract, though. It's legally binding.
But why take the money right now still with all that uncertainty?
Because
you can't spend it.
And you can't. Well, you can always sit on it, which businesses and corporations and people do all the time. The thing that I guess I've been thinking about a lot is there are a lot of people in this country, in the world, and everyone is being affected by this. There's literally no one that has been unaffected. And a lot of people are going to disagree about what's the best course of action. We see that in discussions with our friends and family. We see that on social media. We see that in the news. The thing that I'm looking for in terms of how much I just respect and appreciate how people are handling this is who's taking responsibility and who is looking to pass along responsibility to others. And not everyone can do the same things. Like, I personally am involved in running a small business, and our capabilities are different than that of a professional sports team like Orlando City. And our problems are different, and our money levels are different. But the thing about people in positions of power, managers, owners, CEOs, elected officials, you can judge people by their actions and by how much they take responsibility for their positions and for the people that are affected by the actions of their positions. And so when you see someone like the owner of Minnesota United, who is worth a lot of money and could hemorrhage money for the rest of his life and still be richer than 99% of people who in the world. And we see a person like that who has the ability to, they probably have somewhere in the range of 200 to 300 employees. See someone like that who is just refusing to help out people that need his help and says, here you go, you can look for a job at one of my sponsors. And then we see other people who are, like Orlando City is at least trying to pay the wages of their concession workers that they would have. I think they're at least not doing nothing. They're, I guess, evaluating what they think they can do. And they may be right, they may be wrong. It may be the best course of action, may not. But at least they're trying, is what I take from that. At least they're trying to take some responsibility. And I think that is very important when looking at how we speak with our money after this whole thing is over. Because money's going to be tight for a little bit or maybe longer. And we're going to have to very carefully choose where we spend our money. And so our wallets are going to become basically our loudest voices. And so we can right now observe who's taking responsibility and who's not, and then speak and act accordingly once we get through this.
What do you guys think the situation is going to be like if and when we get back this season? Like, do you think people are going to show up? Do you think that there is going to be, you know, an even more than the usual amount of empty seats or what?
I think people would at least show up for the first game.
Yeah.
I know I would. I think people, I personally am first sports view. Starved. Yeah, first view, I think. I think there will be a demand for tickets for the first game. Mm. And maybe like SS tickets will cost like $35 on the resale market like they have in big games in the past or something like that.
So you don't think that people potentially, like, I'm not even talking about just like season ticket holders. You don't think that people like losing their jobs, like we could see just kind of a dip in people showing up to soccer games, like even like especially casual.
It's possible. Like that. It's possible, but I think that at least for the first 3 or 4 games, maybe people will be so starved for sports, and also it will be technically still the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
So there will be that hope mixed in there. I think, and then it depends on if we win or not.
Yeah.
I think after that little period, though, Chase, it goes down, 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 downhill, though.
Yeah.
I mean, when you start to look at your paycheck coming in, if you have a paycheck coming in at that time, and you start to look at, okay, well, why didn't the club drop prices? Why are tickets still $25, $30 minimum?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unless you're obviously in the supporter section or you already have a season ticket. You know, why is parking still $20, $15 if you do Geico Garage or whatever? Why is, you know, beer, like we were talking about earlier, $10, $12? Okay, what makes me want to go to this game when I can see this game on the television for way cheaper? I can watch the same game, still supporting my team, just not giving them my money that I don't have a lot of.
Yeah. I don't have much of a a faith personally that if we're really going to be taken care of, like by we, I mean like the fans, like, you know, Daniel was talking about this earlier, just like lowering prices and making things like affordable for people who might be looking for something. Like sports is always like an escape for anything. And we're, you know, like it would be the good thing for the community, and it would be good, like Daniel said, for building culture, for, you know, the club to show in good faith that they care about the people and not just money. Like, that criticism gets hurled at MLS a lot, but I just think that it's still probably just going to be the same story, and there's not going to be any sort of price changes with tickets or concessions or things like that. And it's only going to further kind of disenfranchise people who aren't already deeply emotionally connected to the club. And it's just something that I kind of worry about, like, because, you know, we all like it when it's a full stadium and everyone's involved. And just, you know, I guess it's just kind of repeating what you guys are saying, but how we respond to this is going to affect us for, honestly, I think years. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. How much are you guys missing sports right now, though? Like, is it like a massive hole in your life right now?
From my perspective, guys, sports mean a lot. Sports got me through, well, Leeds got me through tough times when I was younger, when I was about your age. Got me through tough times. It was always something I looked forward to, you know. Mm-hmm. As Chase said, there's an escape, and I look at it now. I mean, I miss sports. I have anxiety about, you know, the team and about the outcome. What's going to happen this season? Like, is it going to be, you know, voided? Is it going to be cancelled? You know, am I going to? I haven't been to the. I missed the first game for Orlando this year. So do I have to wait till next year if they void this season? I don't think it'll happen, but, you know, it's little things like that. I enjoy the escape and the match day atmosphere and the seeing people that I know. It's kind of secondary when your business has, you know, struggled because of this coronavirus, though. We're in the vacation rental business, and it's hit us very, you know, quite hard. So it's kind of secondary to that, but it's still an escape that I wish I could have right now, which I don't.
Yeah, it's kind of often the biggest role that it plays, because, like, a lot of people are saying, like, it just, this time has reminded us how, like, insignificant it is. But even, like, insignificant things, you know, can play, like, a big role in just providing some kind of, you know, something that you're interested in, something to escape from, like, general stress and things like that. And you guys talking about, like, possibly, like, voiding the league, did you guys hear, like, what happened to, like, a lot of, like, the non-league leagues in England, mm-hmm. where, like,
well, yeah,
the leagues were just
below the national
voided.
Level.
Yeah, I want to say that it's from like the I want to say like the conference didn't get voided, but maybe everything after that got completely voided.
I think everything after League Two,
really,
right?
I think it's not
Vanarama. It's not after League Two. Yeah, the Vanarama National League is still in play, but everything below the North and South divisions below that has been voided. So, and there's going to be a vote next week on the Vanarama as well. So, you know, after that, it's the English Football League and it's the Premier League, and those two are going to be kind of in hand. So you have to see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
So, Adam, I was thinking about what you said about the Minnesota owner, about how he's one of the richest people who owns Minnesota United and he has all this money and blah, blah, blah. The only question I have is, what else does he own and how many employees does he have? Because if he does that, look, I know it's still not good, but if you think about it, Minnesota is not the only thing he owns, right?
Probably true.
So he has way more employees. So I can and I can't. Like, I always try to see both sides of the coin, whatever that phrase is, but I always try to look at it from, you know, the opposition, the people that I'm not agreeing with.
This is funny.
You know,
Minnesota United's owner is the founder and former CEO of United Health Group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He got a ton of money. He got a ton of money out of that, and he committed some kind of like stock option fraud.
Yeah,
I got him thrown out of the industry.
I have.
He's under investigation
less
for security
than
fraud.
Zero empathy for him.
Yeah,
less than zero.
Yeah, that kind of kills my argument.
I also don't necessarily see him owning anything else other than Minnesota United right now.
It's a former. I think he sold a stake and now he's just appears to be just involved in sports teams.
If it is just Minnesota and maybe one other club, he has way more than enough money to fund these people for the next few months.
Yeah, because Wikipedia,
so, never mind.
Wikipedia, take it what you will, but all it says is personal life, United Health, and Minnesota United. Like, those are the only kind of subsections for him. And philanthropy as well, but...
And he stepped down from United Health in 2007.
Yeah.
2006.
So that's all he's doing right now. And he's already, you know, like we said, like, I'm not going to speak on... I don't know how his little court case ended or whatever, but he's already someone that has kind of committed some questionable financial decisions in the future that got him in some legal trouble, so... He might not be the most sort of, he might be a little more self-concerned than the average person, too.
I mean, at the end of the day, all billionaires are self-concerned people. Yeah, you don't become a billionaire if you're not self-concerned. Mm. So I'm not surprised by the actions. I'm disappointed.
Yeah, even like just looking at it from a business perspective, like I'm going to school for business right now, and I'll be the first to admit that I don't necessarily... understand, you know, a lot of it, and that's why I'm taking classes and things like that and learning from it. But I think that this would just be a bad business move too, because like Minnesota United, especially, like I would imagine a lot of their fans would want to, you know, see their workers taken care of, and just people seeing, like, you know, the owner just absolutely really doesn't care too much. I mean, he's offering other places of employment, but like that's not really going to help you right now. Like, if you lose a job right now, like you guys said, other places aren't hiring. And like, if I'm a fan of a club and I see that, like, that doesn't necessarily bode well for my kind of perception of the team. And it doesn't necessarily make me want to go to games and things like that and support the club financially. So I just think it's bad business.
It makes you sit back and take a second look.
Yeah.
And like, well, why is he doing this? You know, why is my club treating its employees this way?
Well, it's just the, I don't know, like, it's a sense of community that you get, you know, and I think, yeah, I've spoken to a couple of supporters who have been around since Orlando's in the USL, and they always comment to me that the community feel has not existed for some time, that they first felt back in, you know, back at the start of the whole journey, so to speak. You know, you look over at the clubs in Europe, they have those long-standing ties to the community where you're compelled to do the right thing, and quite honestly, it's like we've said, that the biggest people with that responsibility, the ones with the money, the ones in those top positions, they kind of carry the torch. You know, it's like that Spider-Man quote: "With great power comes great responsibility." I think that certainly applies in this case.
I would like to highlight another situation in Europe that I think is a positive example of the haves versus the have-nots, the haves taking responsibility. Of course, we talk a lot about Leeds on this podcast because of Daniel, not bemoaning the fact, but just to highlight another example in Germany in the Bundesliga, I believe the top four teams in terms of like wealth, Bayern Munich, Dortmund, Leverkusen, and Red Bull Leipzig all donated a bunch of money. I want to say it's around 20 million euros each.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of money to lower division teams. I think either second or third division and lower, to keep them afloat while all this is going on. And it speaks to that sense of community that a lot of soccer communities around the world, I use the word to describe the word, but a lot of soccer communities around the world, they feel. In Judaism and Hebrew, we have a phrase, Kehila Kadosha, which means holy community. But it's more, not necessarily community, but almost family is the sense of that word. In that, yeah, we may fight sometimes, we have our individualities, and we have to look out for ourselves and our families, but at the end of the day, we also all have to look out for each other. And those top four teams who could just sit on their butts and be absolutely fine. Like, it's not like Bayern Munich's going to go under. they could do nothing, and that yet they chose to act to help out clubs that they will never play, they will never worry about. I mean, unless Red Bull's going to buy another team, no one's moving up from second division to challenge them. And yet they feel a sense of responsibility to help out and make sure that that important part of soccer in that country stays afloat.
Yeah.
So, well,
it can be done.
Did you guys hear the story of when Bayern Munich almost did go under? And I believe Borussia Dortmund loaned them players or loaned them a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even both. So Bayern Munich almost went under a long, long time ago. And I believe Dortmund were their main rivals back then as well. And they loaned them players and they loaned them money, I believe. And obviously Munich is who they are today because of that. And that's just community in a nutshell. You know?
I respect
clubs looking out for each other.
I think that they even like when Lewandowski went to Dortmund, I want to say that I heard people say that like Bayern will overpay for Dortmund players just as kind of like a still like an appreciation for it. I don't know, that could be completely wrong, but I just saw that on Twitter about a couple of people. So it's still even,
maybe it won't be said, but
yeah, they're still even kind of
do it,
paying for it now. And it's just a shame because like there absolutely will be, you know, lower league clubs from every country that are going to go under. And especially in England, where like non-league soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, I feel like it's such a big part of, you know, what makes it such like a rich culture and history, whatever you want to call it. There's just going to be a lot of teams that aren't going to receive help from the FA, like we saw with like Barry this year and like Bolton even. And they're going to be just hung out to dry. And they, like, I think partially, like, the reason why those top four teams spent so much money for it is, like, they recognize that, like, to an extent, like, there's no point in, like, top-level football if there isn't lower leagues and things like that. Like, they don't necessarily almost exist without them. Like, it's a big part of just German football as a whole. And I'm just kind of interested to see how other FAs respond, particularly England, because, you know, non-league is such a big part over there. I feel like even like their fifth division team gets a final in Wembley. So
there are discussions that the one of the lower league club owners came up with and is proposing to the FA. I read it in The Athletic and it was like all they need to keep every single team afloat is some paltry sum, like 30 million, which is less than many, many, many players nowadays.
And top six could all donate 5 million. And
there top six yeah, could definitely all donate 5 million. And they're not sure if it's going to go through because they don't think the FA is going to give them that money.
Yeah, it's such a shame, man. Because it's like they don't even make any money, most of those teams. Like, they just need to stay almost profitable.
Yeah, I think it was like gate tickets.
Yeah, it's just match. It's just afloat. Match day, whatever they make on the match day.
It's a cultural thing.
But rounding this back to America, I don't think we are in that problem. There is too much money in MLS now that we're not going to struggle to stay afloat. And we have, what, Adam?
I was going to say, in America, there's certainly not as much of an appreciation. And baseball is somewhat of an exception. But minor league teams don't, the phraseology minor league, like you would never hear that phrase thrown around in Europe. But lower division teams, will say, never get respect or credibility as professional, even. You'll hear people joke about in a bar like, oh, I could pitch for a double A club or whatever, you know. And of course that's ridiculous, it's not true, they would get absolutely destroyed, but that's the attitude that we have in American sports.
Yeah. And like I most of like my non-league sort of knowledge, I watched like a guy on YouTube where he just goes around to a bunch of non-league like games, and he's like a Spurs season ticket holder, so his favorite club is like one of the top six most powerful clubs in England, and probably one of like the top 10 most powerful clubs in the world. And even he is like such a proponent of like, if you have a non-league team, like you absolutely should go and support it, because like that is what makes English football. And, you know, that just shows you what even top level fans think. Like, fans of Premier League teams are still such proponents and fans of the non-league scene, because, you know, it enriches their culture, which is something that American soccer doesn't really have much of, if I'm being honest with you. Even as all of us who are like, you know, big fans of, you know, Orlando City and probably the national team, like, there is still a question of like, is there a real, like, you know, levels of passion, I feel like, that can equate to, you know, English football. And I mean that on like a broader scale. Like, I'm sure there are people here who are equally as passionate, but it's just, it's not as, people aren't as passionate about soccer here because we just do a lot of things wrong on this front, I feel like.
It's a different passion.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about earlier, in the English game is very workmanlike. The American game is very... I mean, how would you describe American sports? It's not even workmen. It's not grassroots underdog.
Entertainment.
It's professional.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very commercialized.
Professional entertainment.
That's
what it is.
Just why they reset all the leagues every year. They have the, you know, the no promotion, no relegation. You've got the drafts. You've got the super drafts with the you know, the worst teams getting first dibs at the best players. You know, and this level ground that you try and put all the teams on is to try and keep it entertaining. Because I don't know, it's, I understand why they do it, but it's kind of against the spirit of sport in a sense. You know, in that, you know, I think if your team earns the right to be at the top, they should continue to be until someone proves better to be them. You know, it's, I don't know. I'm just thinking one other thing as well that came to mind while we've been talking is, I've looked at, you know, you look at US soccer's yearly accounts, and I think they had like a surplus of like $100 million, like after all expenses. And then you hear about some USL teams that may already go out of business if this season does not begin. Where could that $100 million surplus be used, do you think? Because I know the EFL have just guaranteed £50 million in loans and sort of donations to clubs in their structure for League One and Two if they need it. You know, couldn't US soccer maybe step in and do this for some of the smaller teams as well?
Yeah, and it's a loan.
A loan.
It's not a, we're giving you money, we don't want it back, which would be amazing. Yeah. But, you know, you collect a loan and you put how much interest, obviously a fair amount of interest, but...
And what about the MLS expansion fees? I mean, they just collected $325 million from one team.
They
that gets distributed amongst other owners of the teams, but I know that's money there that, you know, is not... It's not what you call income. It's money that comes in from a different source. It's spare money in a sense. I mean, again, this is more money that could be put into the pot and used to help this game kind of sustain itself while we go through this uncertainty.
A very interesting topic indeed.
Oh yeah.
Anything else to really say on it though? We covered it pretty well, I'd say.
I just want to go back and touch on the necessity of sports in our culture, I think.
Mm. Okay,
and,
yeah.
So, obviously, we as a society are pretty much in agreement that sports are at least not the top level of essential, given that they are not happening right now and that they're actually one of the first things to go.
What was the quote? It was the most important, least important thing, the most important, non-important thing or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Something like that.
I saw that.
And I'm going to go on a tangent for a little bit.
Drop in, boys.
Yep. This is a philosophy time with Adam. So I tend to get myself into arguments online. I don't
know
if any of you had have noticed that. And sometimes those arguments are not limited to polite subjects like sports, but I have, if you follow me or care to look up any of my social media, you know my positions on politics and stuff like that, and things that I would argue aren't politics, but some would argue are.
Mm-hmm.
Not polite subjects for the dinner table, as our society would deem them. And I'm not going to get into that a lot. I'm going to get into one of the things that will not make very many people mad, I hope. But it's college degree selection. And I hear people say a lot, well, why would you select a useless degree like English? Or like art history? Or music? Or, I don't know, gender studies or whatever. And I hear that one a lot thrown around as a joke. Even though, let me tell you, I have taken a gender security course as it relates to basically global conflict and international relations. And let me tell you, that was one of the most interesting, theory-based, rigorous, gut-wrenching courses that I have ever taken. And I would highly recommend it to anyone in the kind of social sciences field of study. It's worth studying. But that aside, I hear people talk about this group of degrees that are basically arts degrees, hospitality degrees, something like that, cooking, stuff that's not deemed quote-unquote essential, like business or architecture or engineering or, mathematics or science or stuff like that. Why would you go to a college for these useless degrees? But we all agree that higher education is a way to further your expertise in a subject. And let's, for a moment, imagine a world where there's no great literature or art or dance or people studying all of these things and composing histories of them and documentaries about them, or filmmakers or people who are doing the hard work to better understand our society so we can figure out how to shape it to be better for us and future generations. And all of these don't exist. And all we have are businessmen and engineers and architects and scientists and the like, and these essential degrees. I find that world to be incredibly boring and not worth living in. And sure, we may be able to sacrifice any one or number of these quote-unquote non-essential things for a period of time, because they're technically not essential to life. All we need is food, shelter, security, blah, blah, whatever. Yeah, we don't need it to live. Or maybe we don't need it to technically keep breathing and stay alive. But I would argue they're absolutely essential to live. And sports is one of those things. I mean, the four of us on this podcast sit in our rooms and talk for an hour or two about a club, and we've done, this is our third episode since there's not soccer anymore. This is how we connect to people. I talk with my friends about sports. I talk with people online about sports. I write about sports. I do insane calculations and predictions and math problems and statistics because it's a thing that I'm passionate about and obsessed with, and it adds to my life. It is something I enjoy, and it is one of the things that I do the work that I need to contribute to society so that I can have free time and I can have hobbies and things that I'm passionate about. It's the one of the things that I would say I live for. And so when we talk about essential versus not essential, well, essential for what? Essential for breathing or essential for life? And I guess that's my spiel.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's essential for life. I mean, obviously we can't just sit here and twiddle our thumbs and then go about breathing, you know? We'd all go crazy, you know? I think we're all going a little bit crazy sitting in our houses, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very good point, Adam.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Fantastic. Well said.
It's not necessarily essential. We won't die without sports, but
it's a big part of our lives.
It's a massive part of our lives. Like he said, he writes about sports. I write about sports. We all podcast about sports. there are millions of people who have vested interests in sports. Arsenal. There's this guy who's, what's his name? I think his name's Andrew. Arsblog. Owns Arsblog. Been around for...
Blog about asses, right?
Yeah, blog about arses.
Oh, sorry, no, I was thinking of the one I usually read. Sorry.
Only you, Daniel. He's been around blogging about Arsenal since early 2000. And this is the first time he hasn't had any soccer to talk about. You know, even in the offseason, there's transfers and there's preseason and there's still news. He, for the first time since he started his blog, went 4 days without posting anything. You know, and he gets paid. Like, that's his job, to post about Arsenal. So he lost money. You know, how many people are losing money right now?
So many.
Because there's no soccer.
Yeah.
No football, no basketball, no hockey, no baseball, no NASCAR. Did y'all see the NASCAR thing?
Mm-mm. What are you referring to?
They did e-racing. And they televised it. Uh-huh. And they had all the NASCAR drivers sit at home with their little wheel setups and play a video game. And they commentated on it.
That's interesting. Cool. Yeah, it's like the sports of the future.
Like, imagine NBCSN televising e-Premier League. E-MLS.
I'd be all about it.
That's basically what it was.
Yeah.
You know, Abe would probably get last place again, but, you know.
And he won EMLS Cup.
Abe did?
You know? Yeah, Abe did.
Really?
He won EMLS Cup?
Yeah.
That
I thought he just won that charity
event. That guy that he played.
Yeah, that's what it was, but yeah.
That guy that he played, to be fair, was like the second ranked player in the world. So that was tough time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Feyenoord guy. I mean, he made it to the finals or something.
I watched that game and I was like, this guy is unfair.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, like, because obviously Abe's better than any of us at FIFA. I'm watching, like, I really don't know what Abe's supposed to do. Like, I saw him, like, change tactics and formations and everything. Yeah. Nothing worked.
Yeah, it was unfair to Abe because people were giving him as much stick as you would give a professional video game player. But that guy that he was playing was insane. Like, he was next level, like, top 10 in the world type. So it's hard times out here. And,
I think. Like you say with Abe, it was a bit rough on him. I felt that to be calling him an embarrassment and everything else, I thought was really, really harsh. Yeah. the poor lad's doing his best to.
Hard to hear.
I think people were taking out their frustration at Orlando City on Abe. I felt so bad for him.
I think he's trying to add some sort of joy, something to watch for the long suffering public. I mean, before coronavirus, Orlando City's fan base was honestly was just one big entity that needed a shag, to be quite honest with you. Because they're so miserable, they had no success. And then they go after Abe, who puts himself out there, and then I don't know, like, I felt so bad for him. I was just like, wow, why'd you even bother?
Yeah, man. That's
Abe, if you're listening, we still love you.
Yeah, we
stand
do.
With Abe.
Yeah, we do, Abe.
I said Abe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we shut down Gavin.
Yeah, you win. But yeah, that was... I wasn't expecting that conversation to go on that long.
Well, it did.
EMLS, man.
No, not that.
At least it's not Jay Ajayi.
Oh my god. Jay Ajayi. What, that probably one of my...
Didn't he, like, lose by an extremely large aggregate score across his three games?
But to be fair, good for him, bro. If you're a retired NFL player, go ahead, do what you want to do. But he got destroyed.
I thought Jay was going to be so good.
Yeah,
that was
he's had some time.
That'd be the equivalent of you or me playing FIFA at a professional tournament.
That would be the equivalent of, like, any of us just trying to go play, like, genuine professional soccer at any level. Like, you can't just walk up one day. You'll get absolutely destroyed.
Oh, bro, yeah. I could walk up and score, like, a hat trick.
Yeah.
Easy.
Everyone, you know, half of English football Twitter thinks that they could come into the MLS and be the top scorer. Don't necessarily think that's the case.
I mean, they'd have an argument with USL, but yeah, I'm just kidding.
Daniel, shut up.
Kidding. No, I always run that joke when, you know, we talk about, you know, like we talk about Dwyer and his days in USL. I always pull that joke that, you know, I could have got all those goals in USL, but, you know, all joking aside, like, I don't think some people realize how hard it is to play at that type of level. I mean, even if you go watch it live, you can see how insanely skilled those people are. And then when it comes to FIFA, I just forget it. I gave up on FIFA about 3 months ago. I was trying. I had my system set up, my 4-1-4-1. I had all of that going. I had my team built, and I'm still stuck in Division 10. Screw it. I'm like, I put so much effort into that, and I'm like, yeah, I just can't.
Football Manager is the one for you, buddy. You just stare at the screen. Look at the little dots. I love Football Manager.
Yeah, it's actually a lot more to it than that. You know that, Gavin.
Career mode.
Yeah.
Career mode. I was an avid career mode player. My first FIFA was FIFA 10. And then I bought every single FIFA. And this is the first year that I haven't gotten FIFA. And I played career mode. FIFA 10, FIFA 11, FIFA 12. And then I think in FIFA 13, I started doing Ultimate Team and career mode. And then FIFA 14, I did Ultimate Team career mode. And then I stopped liking Ultimate Team. So 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19, the only thing I played was career mode. And they never touched career mode. They rarely touched career mode. And so, you know, I was like, I knew Football Manager existed. I did not have the computer to play it. And I know you can use any computer to play it, but at the time I didn't know that. I also, it was a lot. It was a lot to learn. I don't even know how to explain it. Just so much thrown at you that you kind of have to just deal with and understand. I bought FM19 and I didn't buy FIFA, and I now have FM20 and I love the game. And it's just, you know, I just can't go back to playing FIFA. Like, yeah, I get it. It's arcadey, it's hands-on, but I just don't like career mode anymore, and I didn't like Ultimate Team. I'm not going to play Volta Football or whatever. So, like,
Volta Football's low-key fun.
It's like FIFA Street. I still play FIFA Street from, like, 2007 or whatever.
Because you can do, like, bounce passes off the walls and shit. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I played FIFA Street, and, like, I'm sure Volta, I would like Volta, but I'm not going to pay $60 for Volta. Mm. What are your guys' favorite video game? Let's go there. Let's do that.
Okay. Like at the moment or all time?
All time.
All time. I would have to go with, I think, Horizon Zero Dawn is my favorite.
Oh, that's a good show. I love that game.
My favorite single player game. If you have a PS4 and you have not played Horizon Zero Dawn, the story is fantastic. The art is fantastic. The graphics are insanely good. The game mechanics are unique. It's sort of a first-person shooter, but it's also an open world. And not like a first-person shooter, like guns and stuff. It's a bow and arrow mechanic, and there's like other weapons too, with a bit of melee. But it's very fresh and creative, and you can have several different play styles, and it's just very unique. Concept too. I love Horizon Zero Dawn, and I've done 3 playthroughs of it, and I feel like I could do another one.
Go ahead, Daniel. You guys seem
that's a good shot.
PS4 gamers over there, right?
Yeah, I actually got PS4 and Xbox. I'm a bit of a hardcore gamer, but I don't have much time to play. But yeah, I mean, there's so many games I could pick for all time, but I'll try and go with something more recent. I would go with Fallout 4 is probably my favorite game. I always keep going back to it. It's just so much creativity in there. And, you know, once you get in, you put some of the mods in and you can build your own little settlements and, you know, pick up all the cool weapons and just kind of roam around and do whatever you want. That's a really strong game for me. The storyline is not great, but if you get past that and you just try to admire the art style and the work that the developers put into the world itself, plus the fact that you just kind of go free reign and go wherever you want, I just love that. It's building a world in itself. I'll give an honorable mention to Mass Effect 2. I played the whole Mass Effect trilogy. Two had a very strong impact on me, just because you had to recruit like 12 different people, get them to join your crusade as you try and stop the end of the world. And I don't know, it's such a good long game, well-developed characters, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, so much that I couldn't disrespect it by going back to it again. I felt like I did the story so well the first time that it won't ever be the same again. So those would be my mentions. Fallout 4 has got to be my favorite, though.
All right, Chase.
So I know you said one, but I'm gonna give like my top three, because you guys strike me
rule break.
Yeah, you guys strike me like you play like a fair amount of games. You know what I'm saying? Like I've beaten probably like 15 or less games in my life, but I've played multiple games like three or four times through, and like those are low numbers. Those
are
kind of
how I am.
But so my top three. Number three, I guess I'm gonna go with Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker. Like, I'm more of like a Nintendo kind of guy, I'm not gonna lie.
Mm.
And Wind Waker, a lot of people.
I'm gonna take you for a Nintendo guy.
If you don't get it.
A what?
I got a Nintendo shot if you don't hit it.
Oh, okay, well, we'll see. I got, of the two left, only one with Nintendo. And both of them, both of my Nintendo games here are GameCube games. So I'm gonna go, number two is Super Mario Sunshine. Super Mario Sunshine was the first game that I beat, and it's like fantastic. Wind Waker, I love like the graphics and the art style, and I prefer like the HD version just because it looks fantastic, and I like sort of the combat style and things like that. And my number one unironic favorite video game of all time is SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom.
Oh my god, I love that game.
Yeah.
Chase.
No joke.
That's a great game.
Greatest game of all time. It's SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated is coming out this year. And I can't wait. Unbelievably excited.
Chase isn't gonna leave whatever room he plays his video games in.
Right now I'm playing Animal Crossing. My girlfriend bought Animal Crossing and just for Animal Crossing we're playing together. It's
unbelievable. Bang. Marry her.
Banger.
Oh, that's cute. Banger?
What did I get for shout there? Adam, what?
You did not. I'm gonna have to go with Super Mario Galaxy for the Wii.
Can't go wrong.
Super Mario Galaxy is another game where the story is beautiful, the art is fantastic, the gameplay is unique, fresh, and creative. I love Galaxy. I think it's the best Mario game they ever did. Sunshine's great, also. Sunshine's up there, I think, in my top five, but Galaxy's my number one.
Sunshine's also just a game I played a lot when I was younger, so I'm very like partial to it.
Yeah.
So, if I were to do a favorite, and it's hard, I'm kind of like Chase, haven't played a ton of games. I spent a lot of time playing FIFA in my youth, and I would only play that game and then a couple games here and there. The ones that pop to mind, God of War 2, Gears of War 2, were both great games for me. I loved both of them. Gosh. If I were to say a favorite, out of all the games I played, it's weird because I'm really enjoying FM20. Like, really, really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm going to go with Skyrim.
Ooh. Skyrim, eh? I like Skyrim.
I loved Skyrim. That was the only game that would keep me off FIFA for a long, extended period of time. And when I say long, extended period of time, I don't mean like an hour or two. I mean weeks on end. I would just play Skyrim. I think I finished it four times. And the fifth time, I was doing it again with, you know, trying to do a different character or whatnot. And I got to this one part, and the game just, it didn't break, but I was halfway through it, and the thing that was supposed to happen didn't happen, but it expected me to still kill the thing. It was like a dragon or something, but it wasn't flying out of its cave or whatever. And so the game, I couldn't complete that level, that mission. And after that, I just never played it again. So I'm thinking of buying it and, you know, just restarting another one here in the next couple weeks now that I have nothing to do.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time for video games now. Sadly.
I want to do a VR playthrough of Skyrim, because they have Skyrim for PlayStation VR.
Do they really?
Yeah, they do. And I think that would be the sickest thing.
How did they make that?
I'm not sure. I know PSVR is a thing.
I wonder if they like did that from the ground up, or if they used like, you know, kind of the skeleton of the game. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like they used the skeleton of it. Kind of have to, right?
Is Elder Scrolls 6 coming out anytime soon?
Yeah, like 10 years from now.
Yes.
Is it really?
But Skyrim has one of the highest replay values of any game ever. So.
Oh yeah. But it's weird because I really like Skyrim. I really like Skyrim, but I've never really liked games like Fallout or Red Dead Redemption or GTA. I didn't like those. Like, I respect them. I know they're well-made series and games, but I've never been one for those. I think just something was different about Skyrim that I just really liked.
So while we're on the topic of games, I'm going to, I guess, expose myself as a giant fucking nerd. And I've talked about this.
You've already done that.
I know, right? If generally hearing me speak or reading my Twitter wasn't enough to know this. but role-playing games, like tabletop role-playing games, and the one everyone knows is D&D, but there's so many more than that. I think they're fantastic, and they're a great way to spend your time and tell a story. And here's why. One, they are inherently social, which is contrary to popular belief, because people think, oh, role-playing games, it's for nerds who live in their mom's basement and they've never talked to a girl in their life. However, you need 3 or 4 other people to play these games, at least one at the minimum, usually 2, 3, or 4 more. And so you're at least talking to one person, and you're playing it with them. It is exclusively multiplayer. It's very, very difficult and kind of self-purpose defeating to play a role-playing game by yourself. Two, it can be literally anything you want. You can tell whatever story you want. You can play whatever character you want. You can do anything you want, anything that interests you, and you can, you're not constrained by a video game. It takes a game like Skyrim where you have a bunch of different choices, and you may have a lot, and they may feel infinite, but they're not. You have truly infinite choice when playing a role-playing game. And you can be the star of the show, you can be a side character, you can tell the story, you can be part of the story, you can be the audience. There are a bunch of different things that you can do. And I just think it's really fun. And you can go rules light, you can go rules heavy, you can do a ton of game mechanics, you can just kind of tell a freeform story. So I think if you are looking for a new hobby, you can download role-playing game rules and content from the internet. You don't have to leave your home. It is one that I've been into them for about 6-ish years. I'd say about 6 years. And it's one of my favorite things in the world. So I highly recommend it if you're looking for a quarantine hobby.
If you don't mind, how did you get into role-playing games?
Through my fraternity. Actually, no. The summer before I went to college, my friends and I were in a Toys R Us. And we were looking in like the board game section. We're like, let's go to Toys R Us and buy a board game and play it tonight. We weren't old enough to go to a bar, so this is what we did.
Right.
And so we saw the D&D 5th edition starter set, which is a fantastic product. It has a condensed version of the rules. It has pre-made character sheets, has a few sets of dice, and a pre-made adventure, and basically a mat for like staging battles and stuff and maps. And it has everything that you need and more to make it really easy to get started playing with the latest rules edition of D&D. And we played through about half of that adventure, and it was like a fun thing that we did for a few nights, but then we moved on to something else. And then when I got to college, I joined a fraternity, which I'm not still in, but, you know, I made decisions when I was 19.
We all do.
Yeah. So, and then one of the things that they did was they played D&D. And it was like 15 of, they were like three separate groups. It was awesome. So on like Wednesdays or Thursday nights, we'd go over to one guy's apartment and we would crack open a few beers. When I was 21, you know, we'd crack open a few beers, play D&D. It was a lot of fun. It was, we called it poker night, when we were like in public.
When the girlfriend's house. So
cool. Yeah. No, seriously. Well, my girlfriend at the time, she gave me shit for playing D&D. And she was like, you mean you would rather play D&D with your friends than talk to me? And I'm like, well, yeah. Yeah. So we called it poker night. But yeah, it's literally, and if a bunch of frat guys can get into it, the people that are the literal opposite of the group that you think are playing D&D, it doesn't have to be D&D. There are tons of options out there. Anyone can get into it. So that's my shout for coronavirus activity. Quarantine.
Sounds like a good time.
What are some unexpected hobbies y'all have?
Ooh. What is an unexpected hobby of mine?
Good question.
That's a really good question. I would not, this is going to be a really lame answer, but I would not have expected myself to become a blogger or a podcaster, if I'm being honest. I'm good at writing, or at least I like to think so. I'm not good at speaking. I'm not a great orator. So I guess I would just say podcasting, but also blogging, because I never, even though I was good at it, I never really liked to sit down and physically type. And just one day I was kind of like, yeah, I like to write about sports and I like to write about Orlando City and I want my opinions to be heard. So I'm going to write about it. Then I was like, well, I also want to talk about it. Probably not a good idea, but here we are today. And I'm here talking about Orlando City.
That's a terrible idea. I just
maybe
told
it
everyone
was.
I play D&D.
So I'm going to go with, I think I'm going to go with podcasting, just because I'm not that good of an orator.
Am I? I'll go up next. Well, I would probably honestly almost say the same thing. Almost for like the same reasons, just because I'm like someone who generally is not very like socially outgoing, I guess. Like I'm kind of like more to myself, and I'm not the type of person that I thought would be like speaking for people however many to actually like listen every week. And it's not something that like I have a lot of experience with, and I'm sure that some people who listen might be like, you know, yeah, freaking no shit, but I try my best. But I don't know. Other than that, I'm like heavily into like professional wrestling, not as much as like I used to be before I got into high school or college, excuse me. But dude, like that's like, I was gonna go to WrestleMania this year. I went to WrestleMania like 3 years ago. I traveled to, you know, up and down like the East Coast, just because like there would be some guys making appearances at indie wrestling places, and I would go with some friends and stuff, and you know, we put a lot of time into it, and it was really cool. So yeah, I guess professional wrestling, something that's I'm kind of passionate about, like on a similar level to soccer, I suppose.
All right, Daniel, time to expose yourself.
I can't get in trouble for that again.
That's Daniel's hobby.
Yeah.
You know, my, I don't know, I got, I'm got his pretty busy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty busy as a parent. You know, I got three kids that I, you know, I take care of. So they take up a lot of the spare time I would have. But I like to read random shit. And I'll tell you one thing I'm looking at right now from TalkSport. Man sets off flaring on-house after winning league on Football Manager. And Gavin, if nobody knew you were into Football Manager before, now they do, because I know this is you. All right.
Can we talk about how I got the game last year and my first ever save in my first year I won the Europa League with Arsenal? Can we then talk about how the next year in my second ever save in my second season I won the CONCACAF Champions League with Orlando City? I am good at that game.
But you burnt your own fucking house down, didn't you?
Maybe. Maybe.
And your girlfriend's going to leave you soon because she's going to be saying, you know what, you're too busy building a 4-3-3 and not paying any.
Trust me, we've already had that conversation.
I mean, as far as hobbies go, I mean, I pre-parent life, I should call it. I used to be quite a writer. I used to write a ton. I maintained a blog. No one really read it, but I maintained it. I enjoyed writing. I was pretty active in trying to help people online with their issues and stuff. You know, I was one of those types of people. It was one thing I felt I could offer people, and
so it wasn't.
You know, now
it wasn't like a sports blog. It wasn't like a sports blog. It was just
No. I just used to enjoy writing. It's kind of in the family lineage. My dad used to be a journalist, so I kind of got the knack for it from him. But you know, I have to be in the mood for it as well. It's not something that I can just do on a whim. But I used to enjoy writing quite a bit, and then as kind of life got busier and such. I'm quite interested now in just reading up on conspiracy theories and that type of thing. You know, I look for that type of information all the time. Watch several documentaries and such, and whenever I do get any real time to sit and watch TV, you'll find me watching sort of dry comedy, you know, Curb Enthusiasm, I'm Alan Partridge, that type of stuff. Those are really my hobbies. My time's kind of diminished a little bit, you know, as you'll find out as you get older and get a family, but those are what I do to keep myself busy.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. I don't know how long we've been talking, but it feels like a while.
Over an hour. About an hour and 10. Yeah.
We definitely have content from this.
I think
there's content.
Don't know how directed it is, but
I mean, we had the conversation about club culture and culture in general, sports culture in general. I think that was good content.
I feel like there's a distinct like part one and part two of this episode.
Yeah, part one and part two.
Maybe next week we'll ask for questions, so we can have a physical part one and part two.
Oh, that's a good call.
I forgot to ask for questions. I'm gonna start
get that engagement
because I liked the questions we were getting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess that's a good place to leave. That's probably a good place to leave it.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Yeah. All right. Daniel, that's your name.
Is it?
Fucking hell.
Oh, I forgot what my name was.
I legitimately forgot what your name was. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
Right now, they can find me in my house.
On social media.
It could be on Twitter.
On social media.
My Twitter handle is BucketMan1982. My Instagram is EllenDrod82.
Thank you, Daniel. Chase, where can they find
my
you?
My Twitter is VamosOCSE, and my Instagram is ChaseWCrowley. And also on Twitter, send me your Nintendo friend codes. I need Animal Crossing friends.
I think Chase needs friends.
Yeah.
Adam, where can listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kosher Taco Truck, and send me pictures of your quarantine meals because I am also into food. I like to cook. You can find a little bit of that on my Twitter. And yeah.
All right. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at LionsBlog1, but I'm sure most of you already know that. I hope you guys are enjoying your Lions Blog content. I know I literally haven't posted anything since the league canceled or suspended its season, but I am planning on posting a interesting and possibly debatable topic this upcoming weekend. I've been somehow pretty busy with school, and last week I worked all week, and so I'm gonna be able to find time this weekend to write about my debatable topic. So I hope you guys enjoy that, and I hope you guys enjoyed the content that we've been producing on the podcast, and we will see you next week.
There you go.
Hey.
Good night.
Won't you follow me? quickly here. Nani gets in behind. Here's Nani with a chip. It's 1-1.